Hello and welcome to this audio, which is part of the Open University course DD205, Living in a Globalized World. This audio accompanies the photo essay at the end of Chapter 5 of the first course book, A Demanding World. That photo essay shows you some of the photographs made by Owen Logan as part of a project he calls Oil Lives. The aim of this audio is to put the making of those photographs in context, to think about why and how Owen's photos illuminate one particularly important part of contemporary globalization, oil.
Last night we retested the blowout preventers to ensure that they are fully operational, and now we have just restarted drilling. We've got another 20 or 30 meters to go, and then we hope to come to a sandstone full of black gold.
We've had an oil industry in the United Kingdom since 1851, when James Paraffin Young set up a company in Scotland producing oil from shale. It became big business and lasted several years, well into the 20th century. During the Second World War, there was quite a substantial oil field in Nottinghamshire that produced high-quality oil, and this oil made a huge contribution to the war effort. But the real story of offshore exploration for oil in the North Sea began in 1965, when BP discovered gas off the coast of Norfolk. A decade later, the first UK North Sea oil was pumped ashore. These were the days of great opportunity, but also a time of excessive danger and inadequate safety precautions.
Reports are coming in of an explosion on board an oil rig platform in the North Sea. The explosion happened on the Piper Alpha platform.
Piper Alpha was the worst offshore disaster ever to happen in the UK.
It was a raging inferno from sea level to the top of the platform.
It took place on the evening of July the 6th, 1988. 167 people died.
In the North Sea oil industry, 192 men are missing after a fire which swept through a production platform northeast of Aberdeen.
Of the 230 men on board, that anyone survived at all was a miracle.
I was absolutely terrified because the metal was melting.
Bob Ballantyne was an industrial electrician on the Piper. That he survived at all was largely through not obeying the fixed instructions about where to go for safety. These instructions stipulated that in times of emergency, people should go to the accommodation quarters to await rescue. Most of those who did died.
I was afraid. I was terrified. And I thought, this was a bad dream. This was a nightmare that somehow someone was going to turn this off. Because of the intense heat, I was actually throwing the water over myself for it to cool down, and the water wasn't cold. It was burning up as well.
For years, Bob Ballantyne had been trying to draw attention to the appalling working conditions that existed offshore. A friend of his, Ronnie MacDonald, who was once an oil platform worker and is now a trainer for health and safety, recalls how he first heard of the disaster and how, after it, people woke up to what conditions on many rigs were like.
We went down into the control room, and it was there the radio operator told us, pipers blew apart, there's something going on. And we followed in the radio traffic, we could hear the helicopter pilots talking to one another, and by midnight it was obvious that it was a major catastrophe. None of us slept that night, and the mood on board was one of despair, but eventually over the days you could see a change in attitude in everyone, where actually anger and determination to get something done, not just about Piper, but about the general situation, became more and more evident. And ultimately, that first trip back ashore, I actually met Bob Ballantyne just out of hospital when he'd been asked to go to the local Labour Party office because some VIPs were coming to Aberdeen and would like to talk to some offshore workers. And there we met John Prescott, Dewar, and other Labour worthies who'd arrived en masse in Aberdeen in the wake of the media circus just to see what was going on and threw in their tuppence worth. And I do remember Bob Ballantyne saying to them, we've been telling you for 10 years that something like this is going to happen. Perhaps now you will listen.
The chaplain to the oil industry at the time was the Reverend Andrew Wiley. He had visited the Piper Alpha platform just a few days before it exploded.
I think it was the accident waiting to happen, that the men offshore ran a book on where they expected a disaster to take place, and it was top of the list. I wrote in my logbook and I said, there's something wrong with this platform, but I think I'm a little bit tired to fairly assess what it is. But the next time, perhaps I'll be able to more accurately record it, and of course it blew up before I went back. But the vibes were bad on the platform. The most inedible food I've ever had offshore. The most ill-kept cabin I've ever seen. Electric light bulbs didn't work in it, which is really unforgivable. In other words, morale was bad. Just attitudes were wrong. I mean, it was a bad platform.
Jake Malloy used to work offshore until Piper Alpha. Today, he is General Secretary of OILC, the Offshore Industry Liaison Committee, originally set up to look after the health and safety of the offshore workforce.
I think we all got angry. I certainly changed my whole attitude and outlook from that day on, and that was to ensure that I wasn't going to be caught up in something like Piper, and push myself into the safety side of things, started raising issues, started being a bit more vocal, and then subsequently I had the safety reps and safety committee regulations introduced and stood for election and got into the role of safety rep, and was pretty vocal throughout that time until coming into this.
Even decades after the Piper Alpha disaster, men still continue to die on oil rigs in the North Sea.
There's been 10 deaths, 11 deaths, in actual fact, if you count the lad who died this year. Since January 2000, some of them quite horrific. One poor soul torn in half, literally. That's an average of 2 to 3 deaths a year in what is a very, very small, specialised industry. I mean, at any given time, there's only 10,000 people offshore.
We'll discover later on in this audio CD how the dangerous working conditions that remain on the oil platforms have a lot to do with the particular ways in which the oil industry is globalised. We'll also hear how Jake Malloy and Ronnie McDonald are making huge efforts to change those conditions and make employers in the oil industry take more responsibility for their offshore workforce. Bringing awareness of the oil industry to the public's attention was one of the reasons why photographer Owen Logan undertook a commission from the Scottish Art and Advisory Group to take photographs of those working in the industry. His intention was that the Oil Lives Project would help to bring the whole oil industry directly into the public domain.
Why bother making more images in a world that is saturated with images? That leads me to a question which I put to myself a lot. You know, what is the point? And for me, it's very much about the way images can be used, the way they can assist certain types of discussion to come about, certain kinds of political agency to come about as well.
The fact is that the oil industry is part of our everyday lives, whether we like it or not. Geographer Andy Cumbers from Glasgow University.
You could probably say it's the key commodity in terms of the development of the world capitalist economy in the 20th century, not just because it's obviously critical in a sense of being the fuel that provides petrol for the car, which is perhaps one of the key inventions of the 20th century, but also because it's been used in other industries as well, everything from plastics to actually being still a very important fuel for generating electricity. So, for example, I think even in the UK now, oil still accounts for about 30% of all our domestic energy consumption. And if you add the associated product of natural gas, which now accounts for about 40% of energy consumption in the UK, you know, you can see that the kind of hydrocarbon fuels are very, very critical globally to the running of the whole world economy.
Let's begin our exploration of the oil industry and its global impact by visiting a city on the northeast coast of Scotland that has been particularly affected by the discovery of offshore oil, Aberdeen. At the end of the 1960s, British Petroleum, BP, discovered the Forties oil field 110 miles east of Aberdeen and with the help of a £370 million loan from the British government, built the UK's first oil pipeline. Opened in 1975, it began to pump ashore 10,000 barrels of oil a day. Aberdeen changed almost overnight from a quiet, sleepy fishing port to a bustling, busy city whose main interest revolved around oil.